This is the Space Dojo Show, a weekly podcast about all things JavaScript. You can find out more information at show.spacedojo.com. Enjoy the show. Welcome to the Space Dojo Show, JavaScript fans. I am your host, Josh Owens, along with my co-host,
Ben Strahan. Hello, everybody. Hey, welcome Ben to the new show.
Indeed. First show of the year, new name. We have an awesome new topic, too. So we have Bonnie with us. Welcome to the show, Bonnie.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Is it Bonnie Eisenman? Is that how you say it?
Yeah, that's it. Bonnie Eisenman.
Awesome. I don't think I've ever gotten a name right on my first try.
Right on.
Bonnie, you just released a book, right? Tell us about that.
Yeah, that's right. So Learning React Native just came out last week from O'Reilly, and I'm really excited about it. And it's basically just a how-to guide for how to use JavaScript and specifically React to build iOS and Android apps. So it takes you from like writing your Hello World application all the way up to deploying apps through the iOS App Store and the Google Play Store.
Oh,
nice. Yeah.
Wow, that's pretty comprehensive.
Yeah, that was probably a really small chapter, right? Like deploying the App Store.
Yeah, right.
Just like a page or two.
Yeah, you know, totally simple. No kinks in that process at all.
So if you're a listener and like you've never tried, that's probably one of the like stupidest things I've ever done is like getting an app ready for launch.
Yes. Yes. We got it. We got a crazy project right now where we have to script the submission for both Android and iOS. And we're like web scraping the UI and stuff. It's like,
oh, but the UI changes like every other week.
Yes. This is why.
It's called job security.
There you go.
Nice.
Yeah. iTunes Connect is a whole fun beast.
Yeah.
So one of the reasons I was so excited about React Native was I had done mobile app development before professionally. You know, not a ton, but like say 3 months each, iOS and Android. The difference in jumping to working with JavaScript just made everything so much nicer. And it was such a relief to be able to work with like, you know, tools that are actually like pretty well developed and mature. And it was nice.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Let's talk about that for a little bit. So like React Native is an ambitious project. And a lot of people probably are on the fence from using it because like there's a stigma that it might not be ready. It's like brand new. Like Android wasn't announced that far back. What is your sense of the completeness of it? And is it like ready for production?
What you said about being ambitious is totally accurate. Last year when they announced it at ReactConf in January, everyone was like, yeah, what matters isn't that they're trying to do it. What matters is if they do it well. And I think we're finally at the point where React Native is just about ready for production apps. Android support is definitely less mature. It came out at, I think, in July or August. But at this point, the community is really strong, and it's moving really quickly. And so I would say absolutely. Like, if you're a very large enterprise, then you're going to want to wait a little bit, right? You're going to want to stay a little bit away from the cutting edge. But for most people, I think that React Native is totally ready.
Wow. For both platforms.
For both platforms. And the nice thing about it also is that it makes it pretty easy to dip back into Java or Objective-C or Swift. So if you need to, and if the framework isn't supporting something that you need, you can go and add that yourself.
Okay. So
if you already have mobile developers, then you're going to be able to do that.
Now, say a small shop that is like purely web-based, they're like all JavaScript developers, and they're coming from a Cordova delivery point in the past. Do we need to know Objective-C? Do we need to know Java? How much can we just stay in 100% JavaScript land if we wanted to?
I think if you're building an app that's pretty simple, you're going to be able to stay 100% in JavaScript. If you have an app that requires you to write like very high performance code for something or that's using some kind of like rare API, you might need to know a little bit of Java or Objective-C. But I think as a web developer or a JavaScript developer, you don't need to be nervous about that. I think React Native makes it pretty easy to pick up just enough of the host platform's language and be productive in it and effective in it, even if it's still very new to you. I included Objective-C and Java examples in my book, so I was like, even if you only know JavaScript, you can actually read these. And it's good to have sort of a little bit of reading knowledge. You don't need to master it for it to be really useful for you.
You know, for instance, if you want to use the camera or Bluetooth or, you know, something along those lines, it's pretty easy to do with React Native.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so all of that's baked in already.
Okay.
I think. I'm not sure about Bluetooth, actually. I haven't looked at it. But camera support, definitely.
Yeah, location, yeah, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
All right, that makes sense. So for me, like, I come from, like, I've built a couple Cordova applications. And so I think there's like, a key difference when you compile for Cordova. You're actually just building a web app, and you're getting that web UI view in iOS or in Android, and it's still just running a web page. You're just kind of like losing all that Chrome, the, you know, the browser location bar and back and forth buttons. Like, what is React Native in regards to that? Like, how does it work?
Yeah, that's a really good point. And this is one that I think a lot of people miss when they first see React Native in action. React Native is not compiling to anything. What it is that they've written this interface so that from JavaScript, React is essentially calling normal rendering APIs. So you're not writing a web page. You're just using JavaScript to control the normal production of native views. So everything about your application is actually rendering natively, which is really awesome because it means that, you know, if, say, Apple changes the animation of, like, how a sliding door appears or something like that, you don't need to mimic that animation in JavaScript. You're still just calling the same API. When you're writing with React Native, you're actually writing native mobile apps, and that's the key difference. It means that it's faster. It means that it looks real because it is real.
Hmm. So it's truly native versus Cordova is giving you like that hybrid application.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and in Cordova, you got to like kind of fake everything UI-wise, you know, like, and you mentioned the animations, you know, you're trying to like mimic buttons and all this.
Right. Stuff. Which is why we have frameworks like Ionic or Reap or, you know, things like that, is to give you that easy UI that looks real, but still just a web page.
And then you cringe every time like a new version comes out.
Right. Like, exactly. Because then there's suddenly all this work that someone has to do to re-implement all of that. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I think for me, like coming from a Meteor background and working on a Cordova application, one of the nice things is the fact that like I'm writing kind of like one application in Meteor, and then I can compile to the different platforms. And so like I've got the web and I've got the, you know, the iOS, and I can add Android if I want, and it'll spit out all those builds for me. How much like code reuse are you finding there is between like even just Android and iOS, like building that with React Native? And then like, you know, does any of that translate over to like an actual React web app? Is there any sharing going on?
Yeah, so that's one of the awesome things. You can write platform-specific code if and when you need to, like say different UI patterns, right, on different platforms. So as part of the book, I wrote a like effective memorization flashcard app in 2 weeks, deployed it to the iOS and Play Store, and had 100% code reuse. So that was pretty great. And I was really happy with how easy that was. I had actually written the app before Android came out, and then it just worked.
Oh, wow. Amazing.
Really, really stunning. Facebook said that when they launched their ad manager, they saw something like 93% code reuse. So I think people are seeing that the vast majority of your business logic of, you know, your UI can stay the same. And then maybe, I think like on Android, the tab bar is in a different location than on iOS, right? So maybe you add a teeny bit of code to switch between that. And then for the web, which I think is going to be really interesting, there's no reason why React Native and React for Web can't share the same code. Right now, that ecosystem is definitely immature. They're just starting to split off the packages into like separate things. I fully expect in the next, say, 6 months that we're going to see a lot more people experimenting with that. There's already no reason why you can't share your business logic and stuff like that, but it's definitely not easy to set up a project that way. And I'm looking forward to seeing that happen.
Very cool. Yeah. When they, what was it? 0.14 for React, and they had the React DOM, and you're like, ooh, what are they doing here? What's the roadmap? Yeah. That's exciting.
Yeah. And I think that you can see that there's a clear path forward that could work, and it's going to be really awesome to be able to share code across all three platforms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. High quality code too. Like, you're not like faking anything. Very cool. So you were mentioning a little bit about the community and that there's already a strong community around it. Can you talk a little bit about that? Like, is it NPM packages, you know, books, training, all that stuff? Yeah.
Yeah. So one of the nice things has been watching how Facebook runs their open source project. I think there's been a lot of involvement from people contributing on GitHub and a lot of discussion in outside channels, like, say, Twitter or IRC, or there used to be a Slack, which has since moved somewhere else. I forget where. That's just been really great to see, because basically Facebook has said, we're going to contribute the stuff that we need. It's up to you all, if you find it useful, to contribute everything else. And so I think the last release had something like 90 contributors. It was really neat to be there at React Conf last year when they kicked off and announced that they were doing this private beta, and then watching it expand out from that. There's still, I think, some emphasis on like in-person communication too. So like at the next conference I'm going to go to for React, so it's like, oh, if you're a contributor, then you get discounted tickets based on how much you've contributed the last one. And then the one before that, it was like, oh, and we're going to spend lots of time thanking everyone who's contributed. So it's this mix of people like trying to figure out best practices together, because nobody knows the answers to a lot of things, like how should I do X? And so everyone has to find that out, which has been neat to watch.
That's pretty refreshing to hear.
So has there been like a jump in React Native exclusive code in the App Store? Or I'm sorry, App Store, NPM.
Yeah, so there's React Native projects on like new ones on NPM every day. It's kind of hard to keep track of which ones are just experimental, like someone building out a proof of concept to go with their blog post, and which ones you should actually feel comfortable using. Everyone's also trying to figure out how to package up a React Native thing when oftentimes it includes Java and Objective-C bits that you need to import into your project. So some of the packages have these really long lists of instructions on how to include them. Although that's gotten a lot better in the last couple months, but it is funny. And so, yeah, like, you know, if you want SQL support, if you want like a video player or stuff like that, there's NPM packages for it. But often what happens is that then they get folded into the main project and then the package will, you know, become deprecated.
Very cool. And that's evidence of a very active core team. So that's good. Rock and roll.
Yeah. And I mean, they keep adding people too. I think they've had a couple new core contributors join in the last couple months. So it's good to see the activity.
Like, you don't work at Facebook, too, so I don't expect you like, no. They were a pretty like famous fall from heaven when they like said, oh, HTML5 is not good for mobile devices and things like that. And they were pretty strong saying like, oh, we're going to go 100% native. And now it's like, oh, look what they were baking in the back closet. Like, look what they came out with. Like, this is awesome. Was that always the plan? Or do you know the history of this?
I don't have any insider knowledge of that. But as an outsider looking in, I think it makes a lot of sense as a narrative. And it's really cool to see, right? They took this really risky bet on going like full web for their mobile apps. And then realized that the technology just wasn't there. The support just wasn't there. It wasn't fast enough. It didn't feel right. And so they were like, okay, well, we'll build the best experience we can right now, which means normal, standard, native Android and iOS development. But I think it makes sense from a narrative arc. Like, the company had clearly seen all the advantages you could get if you could develop for mobile like you developed for web. So then they just found this way to make it work, right? It was like, they had this goal. They wanted to have all the nice things of web development. They wanted to be able to create best-in-class mobile apps. So then they did it. And I think they've been really successful with it, and it speaks to a really strong vision.
I think the whole React ecosystem has been pretty successful. It's wild, like, how it's shaken up every JavaScript developer out there. This hasn't been like the only project that was that would take JavaScript and it would like spit out a native app. There was NativeScript before this.
Well, and there's paid projects too, like Titanium.
Yeah. Do you have any experience with those?
I don't have any firsthand experience with them. When reading up on them, I'm not sure. A lot of them seem to compile down to native code as opposed to actually acting as this sort of interpreter layer, which is interesting. And also with some of the older ones, it's interesting because I think they existed before the JavaScript engines on mobile were as strong as they are now. So I don't actually, do either of you have firsthand experience working with those?
So I never wrote code, but I did manage a team. I was writing Ruby code at the time, but I managed a team that was using Titanium. And, you know, I was leading them and made the decision to like ditch Titanium because it really wasn't fulfilling the needs. Like we had an iOS app that didn't really feel like it was hard to program in because of the way it was built. And then mm-hmm. like we weren't gaining the ability to just spit out an Android app either. And even when we did try to spit out an Android app, like none of us were Java people. I don't even think any of us, like we had one Android phone for testing at the time. None of us even knew how to fix what wasn't working with Titanium, which was frustrating. And I have a feeling like it's not that way with React Native because there's a really strong community around it because it's an open source product, not mm-hmm. this paid, you know, paywall kind of product.
Mm-hmm. So in Meteor, we have this like funky thing called hot code push where it detects like the versions and what's up on the server, and it will push out the new code. And it will cache it in the Cordova app. So if there's a new version that comes out and it doesn't require any Cordova plugins, you can essentially just push it up to your server and it will update the app the next time someone opens it up and then caches that app code. Mm-hmm. If React Native is just JavaScript and it's executing native commands through JavaScript, would that essentially be able to happen as well? With hot code push, like the server just is pushing up new React Native JavaScript?
Yeah, so that's a really fun possibility. And someone actually already has a project out that does exactly that. Apple only amended their guidelines, I think, like a year ago to say, yeah totally, you can send, like if it's just JavaScript you're sending, sure, you can change mm-hmm. the way your app executes. So it's entirely possible. And I think there's already at least one or two projects out that do that. I haven't worked with that directly myself. It's interesting, right? Because with the Play Store, you've got like a 24-hour delay, maybe, if you go through mm-hmm. the normal channels to re-release. With the App Store, you've got anywhere from 1 to 2 to 3 to 4 weeks.
Yes.
Usually around 2 weeks. And so there's a definite advantage to being able to actually push out your code early and often. But that still doesn't get you around, of course, the really hard part about versioning on mobile, which is that you have to support all versions always. Because you never know, right, whether or not someone has updated, whether or not they have had, whether or not they still have internet connectivity. But it is really exciting to see the fact that you can get this sort of hot code push thing. I'm not sure what I would call it in React Man, maybe the same thing. But it's a really cool function.
Very cool. So I would say that's probably the unique selling proposition against the other platforms that had JavaScript and they would compile down to native.
Hmm.
Like if we're staying in JavaScript, like there's so much more possibilities now that we have. Especially now that Apple opened up that loophole. I wonder if they're ever going to close it because I hope not. It's awesome.
It's
I take advantage
awesome.
Of it every day.
But I mean, this is the joys of playing in Apple's walled garden, right? They mm-hmm. can change the rules at any time.
Yes.
True.
It's wild.
We're kind of new to React Native, I guess. What other kind of cool things can you do with React Native that maybe you can't do with Cordova?
I don't have a first-hand experience with Cordova either.
Okay.
I mean, I think the main thing is really that you get immediate access to like the actual native rendering stuff and the native APIs. So mm-hmm. that means that, say, if Apple, I don't know, drops a new audio API or a new image processing thing, you can just immediately start using that. Mm-hmm. Someone has to write the bridge code, but oftentimes the bridge code is pretty simple. There's a chapter in my book where we go through and walk through how to write a bridge because, you know, sometimes you're going to want to use the really shiny new things.
Mm-hmm.
And just being able to do that like immediately is, I think, really fun. The other cool thing is that you were talking earlier about like, oh, code sharing across all the platforms, right? There's no reason why it has to just be iOS and Android. So like Flipboard had that cool demo a while back where they had React rendering to using the Canvas API. Mm-hmm. Netflix yeah. basically uses a React Native style approach to render to hundreds of different devices, all with their own rendering APIs. So I'm looking forward to seeing when people start porting like the giant bulk of React Native, that is the platform support, mm-hmm. to like, you know, weird and unexpected places. I mean, yeah. I'm sure we're going to see stuff like Windows Phone before we see like, you know, an open source version of like for my Sony DVD player or whatever.
True. But at the same time, like, you know, I think it could be interesting to see like Apple TV or Chromecast mm-hmm. type of support as well. Be amazing. And especially because when you look at like Apple TV, they made that weird call to decide to not support like web views at all. So like you have to write native views in order to make an Apple TV app. So I can see that being super interesting in the future.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to see a project doing that. And right? Anyone can start taking a hack at it. There was a demo at Midwest JS this past summer of basically a JavaScript-y interface that looked a lot like React Native into writing Mac OS X desktop apps. It'd be neat to see JavaScript eat all these different platforms using React Native as a vector.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah.
It's good that like we have Facebook carrying that torch as well. You know, like that adds a level of seriousness to it. And you could just see how they're driving the developer community right now. JavaScript fatigue and all those articles are like directly attributed to React.
I was in a Slack channel with someone and someone dumped one of the latest JavaScript fatigue articles. And then the first reply was, I have fatigue over all the JavaScript fatigue. As much as framework churn is painful sometimes and requires us to like keep relearning and learning new things, I think it's indicative of the fact that these projects are solving problems that we had, right? Mm-hmm. People wouldn't be jumping ship to React in such large numbers if it wasn't doing really useful things for so many people.
Yeah,
So in some ways, it's like the JavaScript fatigue thing is, I think, evidence of how quickly the community is solving its own problems.
So true. So true. Yeah. And everyone has always predicted that, you know, JavaScript's going to eat the world. And now we're like that was just like a cult chant for a while. But now it seems like it's really happening, you know, and that's exciting. And things are going to be messy until it settles down. But yes, I'm doing it.
I know with Cordova and with Meteor, like that's my comparison point. And if I'm building an application, I get like that DDP client server communication channel to build something, you know, when I need to talk to the server and get data or something like that, that communication happens through DDP. What kind of options are there? Like if I'm building a React Native app, let's say like maybe Uber or something, right? Like I need to know if the car's around the corner, I want to put a marker on the right spot on the map. Like what's the best way to kind of do that kind of thing?
So communication with the server in general with React has always been something where the framework sort of stepped back and said, do what you want, right? It's JavaScript, it's the web, do what you want. And that's why we had this proliferation. I don't know if you've been tracking like the giant proliferation of Flux libraries, which has always been sort of an oddly named thing that lots of people go, so what is this? Why do I need it? Recently has coalesced around a thing called Redux.
Mm-hmm.
So on native, it's pretty similar. The framework says, do what you want. Right, you can import whatever library you want. You can rely on whatever you need. There's an implementation of standard web requests on the native platform, and then you just use what you want. I think for a lot of developers, that's pretty confusing, actually, and it's one of the pain points because you're sort of left on your own to assemble the tools you need. In general, the answer is find a library that does what you want. And if you're coming at it from a React web background, you and your coworkers probably already have a standard tool that you're used to relying on, and it should just work on native.
Okay.
That was the cool part for me when I first did like NPM install of, I was using Greenflux at the time, and then it just worked.
I think they have WebSocket support.
Yeah, I seem to remember hearing about that at one point, and I don't really understand like where exactly that fits in.
So I think that WebSockets are, I'm not sure if they're implemented or not. Oh, no, wait, I think they are. I think that came in late last year. Yeah, and so the neat thing about the way that when React Native implements a feature like this is they just polyfill in, essentially, support for it, and you as a developer don't have to worry about how they implemented it. Really, doesn't matter. You just access it like normal. Apparently WebSockets are a thing. I need to try playing around with this.
Yeah, I think there was a guy in the Meteor world, or at least he was for a bit, that made the PR for this, for WebSocket support. So I just linked it to you guys.
Yeah, yeah, that's awesome. Looks like it works. That's really cool.
And stuff to play with. Yeah, like so much of this complexity is going to be abstracted away in the coming year. It's going to be like almost like a no-brainer because it's that mix of the perfect world where you can have JavaScript, you can have code reuse, but you have a perfect user experience in UI. That was like never possible. That was the holy grail.
Yeah. You know?
And it's coming.
Yeah, and it seems like it's happened. And I think if you dig into the React Native code base, it's a testament to how much grunt work had to go in to making that happen. But now it's built and we get to play with it.
Mm-hmm. One of the other pieces I kind of found interesting, like as I started to dig into React Native, is that it does use CSS, but it's not like full on. Like I can't just say, oh, let's bring in, you know, Bootstrap or something like that, because it's all just, it's all written kind of in a React JSX template, right?
Mm-hmm. So yeah, you don't have to mix it with your JSX, but that's a separate thing. So CSS has problems. I think everyone, even people who love CSS will admit that it has problems, right?
No.
And you can enumerate, like, I feel like usually when I'm writing CSS, I don't stop to think about all the ways which is broken, but there's actually a lot, right? Mm-hmm. You've got the global namespace. You have the problem of like how like selector priority works. You've got the fact that there are all these different ways to do very simple things and they collide with each other and clash. But at the same time, it's a pretty powerful way of describing styles. And so what React Native has done is it's implemented a very small subset of CSS. Very, very small. And the goal is to stop yourself from shooting yourself in the foot with CSS. And so we no longer have a global namespace. You're not going to deal with floats. Flexbox for everything, basically. It's interesting because it's a pretty small subset, but it does basically all the things you're going to need. And so if you're coming at it from like a web background of using CSS for styling, it's going to feel a little bit weird at first. But I think in the end, it means that you can keep your previous knowledge and just apply it in this very narrow focused way, and you get more maintainable styles. So I have found it pretty nice to work with. If you haven't used Flexbox before, then you're going to have to get friendly with Flexbox. That's like the main thing.
Yeah.
But that's probably a general principle for the web as well.
Exactly. Yeah. This isn't going to be React Native only. Like, you're going to be using this in all your web projects moving forward.
You can actually use the CSS implementation that they have. You can use that on web too, which is what's really cool, right? It doesn't change any behaviors. It just tells you that there's certain rules you're not allowed to use. So back to the thing about, can you share code between web and mobile? Yes, especially with the styles.
Mm.
The other interesting thing is that because it's JSX and you've got your markup and your JavaScript all living together, it focuses on separation of like concerns and role as opposed to separation of technologies, right? So a component includes the control logic, the markup, the styles. And that's your very small atomic piece instead of separating out a JavaScript file, an HTML file, a CSS file. And because of that, with the CSS, it looks like you're using inline styles, which I think to a lot of people when they first come to React is really cringe-inducing and really confusing. I promise it's worth trying if you're coming to React for the first time. And it gives you a lot of really nice separation of concerns. It just feels unintuitive at first.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a lot going on with CSS in the React world.
Yeah.
I don't know where the dust is going to settle with that, but I'm going to play around with React Native because that's going to possibly give me some insight. Because like whatever's mostly supported by React out of the box is the way to go. From a design standpoint, what are some other things besides CSS that would like catch someone by surprise when they're making something with React Native? Is there something different with like the views or pages or how's routing work?
Yeah, so it depends on if you're coming from like a background where you've done mobile or not. If you've done mobile, whether it's through Cordova or through, you know, native mobile development, then I think a lot of these aren't going to be gotchas. But especially if you're coming from a web background, it's going to be confusing to be like, wait, what is navigation even? What are all of these different UI elements? Remembering that you have to have like touch feedback, right? Like a button needs like a touch state to indicate that it feels touchable. So all this stuff. And so Apple and Google both have really good human interaction guidelines, you know, basically will walk you through all of this stuff. And it feels like a lot to absorb because it is. If you're writing for Android and iOS, you better have both devices just so that you get to know what a good or excellent experience feels like. And then, yeah, I think the biggest gotcha is probably still navigation, because navigation in mobile apps feels very different than navigation on the web. You can do a web style, like, stack of pages if you want, but then, like, how do you fit your tabs into that? How do you fit your menus? All that stuff.
Yeah.
There's a couple different options. React Native has its own navigator component that handles a lot of that logic, or gives you an easy way to wire up that logic. And I found it pretty easy to use, but it definitely requires rethinking the way that you like wireframe your different interaction screens.
the weird thing when you go from web to mobile is realizing like there is no browser bar, there is no back button. So like you have to make sure like if they navigate down into this corner of your app that there's a way for them to get back to the other parts as well, you know? And
yeah,
that's kind of what you're talking about.
Yep, and that part can be really confusing. If you use the standard navigator component, though, and you push something onto the stack, it'll also add that bar at the top with the back arrow.
Okay.
It's really nice.
Yeah.
But then you still have to be like, okay, how does like the equivalent of a hyperlink work, right? Mm-hmm. Like if I have a button that goes to some other flow in my app, how do I connect them logically? Mm-hmm. And figuring that out, I feel like, if you're not careful and if you're not working with like a good designer or like UX person, you're going to build the app and then be use it and like it'll work in your demo. And then after using it for a week, you'll be like, that was not what I wanted.
It's going to be like the pick your own adventure books.
Yeah.
You know, where like you turn the page and you're like, you're dead. What? I just turned the page. What do you mean I'm dead? Back. That's fun. I'm pumped. You are so efficient at answering our questions, buddy.
Yeah.
I'm blown away. You're like amazing.
I'm like running out of them now.
Well, I have a question to ask you. Yeah. So you said you're going to give React Native a try. What are you going to work on building?
I do training. So I'm going to work on a training class that's going to be React and Cordova. And then I'm going to port that to React Native. And that'll probably be my second class this year, will be like a React Native. And it'll be the same application. And essentially, it's just a, I've built it in Meteor already. So now I want to do like React. Have you heard of Urban Spoon?
Yeah.
So it's like a clone of that, essentially. And it's just got like, I'm using Google's local API to just pull in information and then populating pins on a map. And it's basically just finding restaurants and bars that are around you. And so like, as you walk around on the map, it's actually pulling in real time, pulling in new pins and that kind of thing. So
cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
That sounds like a really good size project.
Well, you know, maybe that's a good question too. You know, that's something that I've been able to do. You know, I can teach in about 4 hours. It took me about 8 hours to put the course together, but I was able to just pull in Leaflet or something like Google Maps to get the mapping going on. What options are there in React Native? Can I just pull in those same things or something different? Or
yeah, so you can do that if you want. You can actually do the work of porting over an existing mobile SDK, which is pretty cool. But it also includes the standard map component, right? So both iOS and Android have standard out-of-the-box map APIs. Mm. So I think when I wanted to include a map, it was basically in angle brackets, you write map.
Okay.
And then you got one. And then you
markers on it.
Yeah. And then, you know, it exposes a standardized API for adding markers, getting the user's current location, setting a watch on it. You can do your usual set timeout to poll if you want.
Jeez. Yeah. It sounds like it'd actually be easier to write because the bulk, like I'd say at least an hour of the course is spent like getting the maps working properly with Meteor. So
yeah. Although maps are always fun to do in a classroom setting, because then how do you debug your map? So I ran into some fun issues while writing the book where I was like, occasionally my geo, like the chapter where I was touching the geo APIs, occasionally things would crash, invalid input. And I was like, I can't walk around until I find something that makes this crash. What's going on? I had switched latitude and longitude is what had happened.
Okay.
But it was still really interesting because it's one of those situations where you're like, okay, how do I test something that requires me to be like, you know, constantly messing with debug settings?
We've got a Slack chat room for Space Dojo. People join in there. And we basically, like, it started as a Meteor Slack chat room. And one of the guys was building a Cordova application. And it was kind of like you're talking about here. He called it Walk of Claim. And basically, like, you would walk around a shape. And once you close that box, like, you claim that space in the app. So it was like this little game. But then, like, every time he'd make a tweak, he'd be like, all right, everybody has to go out and, like, test it out. Go walking, you know, make a square somewhere. So it's kind of funny. Before we started, we were asking you where you worked. Like, we've been talking about Facebook, but you actually work at Twitter, right?
Yeah, that's right. I started at Twitter about 2 months ago.
Oh, okay. Nice. So were you doing React Native stuff before you started at Twitter, obviously, right?
Yeah. So before Twitter, I was a software engineer at Codecademy, which is like a free online site for learning to code. Mm-hmm. And so it's a very rich single page web app. When I joined Codecademy, I actually started the week that everyone had decided to learn React. Mm-hmm. So I got to participate over, I think, my first 3 months there. We did a full rewrite of the app in React.
Really?
Yeah, which was a really awesome way to learn. And that was about a year and a half ago now. So React was still, I think, much
very
newer.
Fresh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a really great learning experience. And we, you know, hit a lot of issues with React. And then everyone was, again, figuring out best practices as we went. And that was really awesome. And then React Native hit. And having had a bit of mobile experience in the past and really enjoying what React I had done, I was really excited about it. Codecademy doesn't actually currently have a developed mobile app. But, you know, I did some React Native prototyping and then just really dove into it as like a side project.
Nice.
Yeah. Mm.
That's awesome.
Doesn't it have like a code for 10 minutes app or something like that? Or?
Yeah, there's an hour of code app.
Yes.
Is that built with React Native or no?
No, that's a native iOS app. And I think it's iOS only.
And it's been around for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it came out about 2 years ago and it hasn't actually been actively developed on since.
Well, they could just port it to React Native and then it'd be everywhere. You know, one other interesting question for me is what have you heard? Like, we talked a little bit about other platforms, but have you heard any whisperings of like the Facebook team working on something like Windows support, Windows phone support, or any of that stuff? Or
I haven't heard any whisperings. Again, not being at Facebook, I can genuinely say I don't know.
Yeah, fair enough.
But I mentioned Windows Phone because I know that some other companies, like Duolingo, for instance, was Windows Phone first in a lot of ways because it's a platform that I think you know, in the American tech scene might be easy to overlook, but is actually has a lot of traction, a large user base.
Yeah. I hear it's popular in Germany. No idea why.
You know, it's a good product if the price is right. I'd be curious to see if that happens. And I'm also really, really curious to see if and when people start porting React Native to, like, I don't know, game consoles, Apple TV, whatever.
Yeah.
Even something like the Apple Watch, like that would be so much easier to do as a React Native app.
Again, that's another one where you don't have a concept of like a web UI at all. And I don't, you know, like looking at a little 42 millimeter screen. Whoa.
I got a Windows Phone app or a Windows Phone. I'm ready for this.
Wow. That's crazy.
All you listeners, I'm showing them a Windows Phone app. I am not out of touch. I am running the latest stuff. Windows Phone.
So I've run,
right? I don't know.
Windows 98.
I don't want to bash on Windows Phone. I've actually like interested with it as a product.
I'm in consulting right now and we consult with startups and stuff. So it's great. So I'm on the cutting edge now, but I came from the corporate world.
Mm.
And I remember when Windows Phones came out and like our CTO on this like multi-thousand employee company is like, Windows Phone is the latest technology. Everyone needs to turn in their iPhones to get a Windows Phone. And I was just like, oh, it was such a horrible experience. Mm-hmm. I got to say Outlook performed well. Outlook mm-hmm. performed well. There you go. I got to give it to them.
Yeah, you know, I am
a basher.
That is interesting because like, as I'm looking to ditch Mailbox, right, because it's shutting down.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry.
I keep looking at these lists of like best email clients, and Outlook is always on there.
Mm.
Wow.
I mean, it's interesting, right? Because I was a Sparrow user, and then Gmail ate Sparrow.
I was a Mailbox user. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those things. Maybe you should make a React Native app.
Well, I like Inbox. I love Inbox.
I like Inbox, but I'm not allowed to use it on all the domains in which I have.
There's the rub, right? I don't even think you can enable it. Like you have to like email.
No, it's open now on custom domains.
But your administrator has to enable it.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, I tried.
And you have to have Gmail.
Right.
Like it has to be a Google. Yeah.
You know, Google for apps for business. Yeah.
The bad thing for me is like I like the fact that my, you know, Mailbox Inbox shows me all my accounts kind of in one view, and there's, you know, I'd have to go look at like different mailboxes and
It's like one of the rules, right? People will complain about their email clients, about JavaScript framework churn, about...
You know what it is. I try not to complain that much, except for if it's Windows. But anyway, I don't want to seem old. I think if I complain, I'm going to be old. Like I'm
absolutely. You know, yeah. Like I was, it's funny.
It's not the worst outcome.
My, my daughter goes to the junior high here and they've got these little like Lenovo touchscreen tablets and she's got, you know, a MacBook and she's got an iPad and a phone. You know, I saw a text the other day where she's telling her friend like, oh, you're so lucky. Those are amazing. And it's like, it's running Windows. This is her first exposure to Windows. Was this year. So, you know, I don't know. It's really interesting to watch that happen.
Yeah. So I volunteer teach programming 2 days a week at a high school in the city. And it's always really interesting because for the teenagers I'm teaching, mobile comes first and they care about very different things than I do in terms of, you know, your daughter's not seeing Mac versus Windows. She's seeing like this one device and this one kind of experience. Right. And it just like really confused me a bit when we were talking about, I think, Tumblr or something. And then one of them was like, wait, Tumblr has a website? Because it's very much app first. The way that they
interact. This is a great idea to like stay relevant as a developer is donate your time to a high school.
Yeah, right. It's like I could tell what the kids these days are talking about.
We're so old.
It's crazy.
Kid. I mean, yeah, I really like doing it because I like teaching, right? Same reason, similar to how I ended
up. Child, tell me about your phone.
Yeah, like the first day, right? Because these are students, they're like 15 who have never programmed before. Mm-hmm. Some of them don't have computers at home, stuff like that. But it's like, we were like, okay, so tell me about a website or a technology thing you use and like how you use it. And that was like the first day just to like establish like a baseline of, look, code is everywhere. Mm-hmm. And the answers they gave were all really great. And just a lot of stuff where I was like, wow, I did not think about that. But yes, that is in fact a thing you could program. The ways in which technology exists in their lives is it's the cutting edge.
Yeah.
Working at Twitter has been funny because now I have to learn how to like, you know, exist on Vine.
I'm starting to get hooked on Vine.
Yeah. Oh my God. We sat on the couch one night and probably watched like 3 hours of Vine stuff instead of watching TV.
That sounds awesome.
It's good stuff.
When you find a good channel, you just like keep going and it's hilarious. Mm-hmm.
There's amazing stuff on there. Yeah.
Yeah.
One thing that I'm trying to get over still, and like you guys might call me old for this, but like I still have the Snapchat stigma when it like first came out, you know? And now, but everyone's on Snapchat. It's just like what it is. And I'm like, I don't know. I don't want to go on Snapchat. That's shady.
Well, I was introduced to Snapchat by my little brother, so I have that bias against it.
Nice.
Bonnie, tell us what 2016 looks like for you. Are you going to be at any talks, giving any talks, any conferences?
Yeah, I will be. So 2016, I'm going to be at React Europe in June. So that'll be in Paris, and that should be really fun. You'll be talking about React Native, go figure. And other than that, right now I'm working on some different stuff on the side with React Native, hoping to get some more tutorials and things like that out.
Very Thanks. Cool. And the name of your book is Learning React Native by O'Reilly.
Yes, that is Very correct. Cool. Available from O'Reilly and Amazon in print and ebook.
And that just came out, right?
Yeah, came out last week.
How's the feedback been so far?
It's been really positive. I'm really excited to get it into the hands of actual people. And so far, people seem to find it useful. So it's really
Very
great.
Cool. I'm going to go and buy it right now.
Awesome.
So we usually end the show with like a thought or a thing that has like improved your life in the last 1 or 2 weeks. We kind of forgot about the last couple months.
But... Yeah, we did. A pick.
Yes, a pick.
If you listen to JavaScript Jabber, we totally stole it from them. So guys. But we got to prove that we're like not stuck to our desk. We're not nerds, but we actually get out in the world every once in a while.
Oh, dang. Mine's so nerdy, Ben.
That's why I framed it like this, because I mean,
I can also be a nerd and also do other things.
Yes.
I promise.
Yeah. See, we are normal, you know, we interact. So,
all right. All right.
So that's what it is. So we picked one.
So a thing that's improved my life in the last week or two.
Or something that's cool that you just want to give props to.
One thing that I wanted to do last year was start reading more poetry. So I've been working my way through Prelude to Bruise by Saeed Jones, and that has been a wonderful, wonderful experience. And I had the pleasure of seeing him perform live a little while ago, and now I'm finally working through the rest of his book of poetry. So I think that's going to be mine.
Oh, that's fun.
Nice.
That's fun. Very cool. Well, I'll go next. So it's January. What is January known for besides cold weather?
New Year's resolutions.
New Year's resolutions. Dieting. Yeah. Yes. My wife is awesome. She goes to the gym every day, but man, she does not look forward to January's because they're packed with resolutioners. That's what they call them.
Yeah.
The people who sit upside down on the equipment. And
I heard a joke about that. It's like, you know, someone was saying they go to the gym and
it's legit.
Line, and he's like, oh, wait, I'll just be back next week and there'll be no line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, so I've been getting in a little bit into health, but I don't want to exercise. So what I do is I'm going to hack it because I am a nerd. And I'm like, well, what if I just change my diet? Can I just change my diet and be healthy? Can I just do that?
Mm-hmm.
The minimum. So that's what I'm doing. So like I have breakfast and lunch out of a bottle.
Are you soy lenting?
That's what got me started.
Okay.
But I didn't like the ingredients on it. I just heard about nootropics too. About mm-hmm. a couple weeks ago, so I wanted to like include some of that stuff. And there's, if you go to diy.soylent.com, it's like a whole community of people hacking this stuff. And my wife is like, you're going to miss the variety of life and all this foods. I'm like, no way. I want efficiency. I don't want to think about it when I wake up in the morning. I want to mix it up. I want to be powerhouse. Okay. So this is what it is. I picked
How many days are you into it?
I think this is my third week, third or fourth week.
I did soil it for a little while because I have some dietary restrictions, and it's been an experience, you know, get my 10 bottles a month.
Well, I do have a regular dinner, so like my wife was going to be really angry if I stepped out of dinner every day, so I have to keep her happy there.
Good luck with that endeavor.
Variety. I've been like a vegan and vegetarian for a long time, and like always kind of flirted with that when I was like off it. I was like, oh, I'm still going to keep those mantras really. But I've been trying the, I forget what it's called.
Keto chow?
Keto, yes.
Ketosis
and all stuff. So now I'm the opposite. I'm like all meat and all fat and all that stuff and all cheese and it's been fun. I've been losing weight like crazy. It's
nice. Nice.
I have no idea why this is happening. I eat more fat, I lose more weight. I don't understand. Anyway, that's my thing. Keto chow. Do it.
So I'm actually looking for something new. So maybe I'll have to look into Keto Chow. We just started. So my pick will be like literally right before we started, I just got done working out and like ran in here and my face was probably red when we started. But so we started doing the 21 day fix, which has been pretty interesting. So it's only like a 30-minute workout and it's from Beachbody. I don't know. Some people might not like that, but they've got an Apple TV app, so it's like $15 a month. We get access to all their videos. Basically, you're just supposed to have like 6 cups of green a day, 6 cups of protein a day, 2 cups of carbs total. So you're just like trying to balance out your meals throughout the day. And that's been working pretty good. I'm down probably about 6 pounds so far, and I've lost about 9 inches because of working out.
Yeah. Wow. So. And you know what? You were a prolific runner too going mm-hmm. into this. So it's not like you were like unhealthy.
Well, you know, the last time I ran was November 21st up until like Saturday, I think it was. You know, I'll say this, like, you know, running every day for 2 months trying to get ready for my daughter's 5K, like get back to a speed I'd be happy with. Like it took me all of 2 months and like I took a month off. And now like I've done 2 weeks of just a little bit of like 30-minute weightlifting and light cardio. And like I was still at the same pace that I was, you know, a month and a half ago. So lifting weights matters.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Well, good stuff. Well, finishing up, Bonnie, where can people find you? Are you on Twitter? Are you on Vine?
Well, I am obviously on Twitter. Yeah, so I'm on Twitter as @Brindell, B-R-I-N-D-E-L-L-E. You can also find my website, BonnieEisman.com, has my contact info. So yeah, I'd love to hear what people think about React Native or the book or stuff in general.
And if they get stuck, they just tweet at you, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. I will. I don't know.
Right on. Right. You have a new follower right now.
Good stuff. Thanks so much for having me, guys.
Yeah. Thank you so much for coming on. It's been awesome. All right. Tune in next time, guys. This has been a Space Dojo production. You can find out more information about Space Dojo at spacedojo.com. It's easy to join the mailing list and stay in the loop. That's SpaceDojo.com.